Sabor y Salud Podcast.
Taking out all the things that are white and making them brown. Yeah. Doesn't that sound beautiful?
I sensed a lot of cultural incompetency with therapists.
Like meteors like coming out of your booty hole.
Yeah.
I'm gonna figure this out, okay? I stuck on the lata, the can right there, jackfruit. Yeah. It's gonna work out, okay?
What up, what up? It's me, your host, Velin Mojarro, and we are back on episode 5. So we had to take a break a couple weeks ago, and we didn't release an episode because, you know, I needed to do some self-care and healing. And I thought, you know what, we can't be making a podcast about health and then bullshitting and not taking care of our own health. So it was just a moment that I needed to take for myself and address some emotional health and mental health and physical health things that were coming up for me. Because, you know, I'm taking a health journey too, and this podcast is a part of it. So I thank y'all for sticking around. And yeah, let's dive into this episode. So in this episode, episode 5, we are chatting with Christina Wong. She is this hilarious, outrageous, and wonderful, talented performance artist, comedian, and rapper. Yes, I said rapper. Look her up on YouTube. Her videos are amazing. I got a chance to meet Christina first about a year ago when we were both doing a show here at UCLA, and she was doing a piece about her journey around mental health. And Christina actually created a show in her life called Wong Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, where it addresses the high rates of suicide among Asian American women. So I feel like this episode is actually really poignant to what's happening right now with the news of all these folks taking their lives, that we have Christina kind of sharing her experience around mental health and her own journey on mental health. So you're going to hear her talk about that. You're going to hear her talk about her challenges around finding a therapist, which I resonate with a lot. You'll hear me share a little bit about that. You're also going to hear her chat about just existing in her female Asian American identity. And then lastly, you're going to hear about how she made Trump's blocked Twitter list, because that's just how Christina Wong rolls. So I'm excited for you to hear more from Christina. If any topics of suicide or gun violence are challenging for you, I do want to say that we do touch on those topics in this episode.
So what is it like to be an Asian American woman in comedy?
Well, I kind of sort of fell into that label of comedy. I saw myself more as a serious comedian, but then, I'm sorry, it's not serious comedian, serious performance artist, which is like, but I guess that's what a performance artist is, a serious comedian. And people began to introduce me as a comedian, and I would be asked to perform at comedy spaces, but I tend to do more these long theater pieces, right? And more storytelling spaces. And I'm very intimidated by stand-up spaces. Like that audience is too drunk and too bottom line and so male. And I see it shifting. There's a lot more political comedians and comedians of color, but I just found like myself not really liking those spaces that much, and found myself doing what I do in theater spaces. So to answer that question, it's like, it's pretty much like being sometimes invisible, you're often compared to every other Asian comedian.
Right.
I feel like I fight having to fulfill sort of an agenda of what an Asian woman comedian is supposed to be joking about. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, you saw my last show, which is about my time in Uganda. There's not a lot of comedians talking about, Asian comedians talking about their relationships with with African rappers in East Africa.
Yeah.
So that was like a very specific thing that happened to me. But, you know, my mom does not have an accent. She was born in the U.S. I always joke that's like half the jokes that I could be telling that I can't tell.
Right.
It's a lot for an audience sometimes to grasp that, what? She doesn't have immigrant jokes.
Right.
She doesn't have mommy funny accent jokes. I do notice I get often brought in on panels where it's a diverse panel. I'm usually the Asian face. That has happened a few times. I don't mind. Glad to work. And on these panels or conferences, I'll be like, okay, here I am.
Yeah.
I'm here to represent 6 million people. Here we go.
On my back. No big deal, world.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I feel you so much. And I realized, I'm like, oh, I'm the token. I'm okay with being the token. Like, that's cool. Like, better me than someone else. Like,
yeah, right? Yeah.
But it's a lot of pressure. Yeah. Damn, that's wild. Mm-hmm. That makes me happy.
I mean, better than you're not present.
Right?
Because, like, yeah, very much like Asian Americans are not, like, our situation is so, we're such this weird hinge between white privilege and black, like real life and death issues that black and brown communities deal with, mm-hmm. right? But it doesn't mean that we are not, we don't intersect with black and brown issues, right? Right? But it, yeah, we're definitely this weird anomaly that, that needs to be addressed and visible.
I do want to talk about the show you wrote a while ago, Wong's Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Mm-hmm. So can you just talk a little about what it is and then how you came to like create that show?
So Wong Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, that is like my signature show. Mm-hmm. That was just a show that defined my life for about 8 years. And the initial impulse in creating that show was I wanted to write a show that looked at the high rates of depression and suicide among young Asian American women. At that mm-hmm. time, I was actually in that age bracket. There were statistics that were coming up saying that young Asian American women had some of the highest rates of depression and suicide in this country. And it's a statistic that I think that when I had first heard it, it was both like felt very surprising, but also very familiar, like surprising in that, oh, wow, I'm not the only one. But also like, yeah, I get it. I personally get why why it's so crazy making to be like an Asian woman. I mean, the show took a long gestation period to get to where it was. I initially went into it thinking, oh, great, I'm going to make this show. I'll be a hero among my community. I'm going to save people with this show. And so the show basically captures sort of what it was like for me in real life trying to make a show about this issue that no one talks about. Is I say, hi, I'm Christina Wong, and welcome to my show, Wong Flew the Cuckoo's Nest. You might be wondering, is the show really about you? No, it's all fiction. It's all based on other people outside my family, because that was a real concern that had come up with my mom. She said, I'm really proud that you got all these grants to work on this show. I'm going to bring everyone to the show. Don't talk about me in the show. Which is sort of just like, how does anyone address issues of depression without talking about their family, right?
Right? Your personal life.
And, or it's personal. And it sort of felt like this is the circumstance of being an Asian American woman, right? Like we're always like put out there to like be this exception, not challenge the status quo, just like try to work quietly three times as hard as a white guy to get ahead, to like not show any pain, to be sort of just project ourselves as perfect. And just always say, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. And that was sort of the weird thing, that the weird meta problem that happened during the show is I'm trying to address a problem no one's addressing. I'm trying to create a show that doesn't get personal or expose my family or myself in any way. And it became impossible. I was just like crying on my couch writing the show, like just knitting. Like that was my weird soothing hobby that I had now. Now it's sewing. And I would just knit and knit because the show was going nowhere. Like, and it was also, what was weird is when I went around announcing that I'm working on the show, I got emails from all these Asian women I'd never met before who are like, I'm so glad you're working on the show. My daughter wrestles with this issue. If you'd like to talk to her, or I was working on a small documentary for my class about it, and I would love to talk to you. And I'm not trained as a therapist. So it's a job I never would ever want to have. It's just not my thing. And I just found myself just crying and crying, talking to women. I'm like, how am I supposed to endure this process? Like, I'm not, and am I leaving people more traumatized? And what is my responsibility? Right. And I really did feel like people wanted to almost like I began to resent the process, because I felt like people were just like throwing their shit on me, you know, right. Like to handle. And I don't say this as a criticism or whatever, but that's how I felt at the time. Mm-hmm. Right. And I understand. Right. Because it was like, here's someone who's not a big institution, who's easier to access than help, quite honestly. Right. Who seems to make herself available to talk. And I was trying to be that helpful person, but I had no idea. Like, I was barely surviving mentally myself. And so the show really becomes this character named Christina Wong, who says at the top of the show she's going to save all women from depression and suicide and explain why it's happening. And we're going to use the dramatic arc of fiction, because it's a work of fiction, to move past the climax to the falling action, and we'll find a resolution. And I keep trying to like very quickly, efficiently move towards the end of the show and fix this problem. And I keep ending up still at the crisis. We keep checking in on the arc of fiction. We're still at the crisis. Mm-hmm. Where are we now? Still the crisis. Still the crisis. And that's really what depression looks like, is like someone lying to themselves that everything's fine, only to end up still at the crisis. So that's, it was so meta. It took a long time to, like, I was so buried inside that show that it was really hard to just get out. It's like I went down the well without a rope around my waist, Yeah, I just got really sad. And I was so fortunate that I got to, like, very few people in my field get to tour a show as long as I have. I'm very lucky. I also had to work super hard to get those gigs and like chase schools down and students down to present me. And I would present my show in very compromising environments. And I was really wearing myself out. You know, I just felt like such a martyr, and I didn't know how to say no to it. I had very few mentors who had done exactly what I'd done before. And, you know, some of my mentors were like, oh, when a show wouldn't serve me anymore, I just would stop touring it. I'm like, yeah, but I'm not married to somebody who can, you know, underwrite my lifestyle as an artist. Like this, it was like this thing where I made just enough money maybe to get ahead a couple months, mm-hmm. but it would be very hard for me to make a job transition. Does that make sense? So, right. So I really like struggled with how to move on from that show. I made two new shows, and about very different topics and just didn't feel good about it. And then I ended up deciding to go to Uganda, partly because I was just so jaded. And then I ended up making a rap album in Uganda. And now I'm touring this show that I love right now. And it's changed my perspective on art. Like I really realized from this whole process how much I had to get out of my own head. And I don't even know how people who work in mental health can keep saying, because this is like, it's a lot to constantly have to replay the same narrative in your right. body over and over again, which is literally what I was doing. Mm-hmm. Like you imagine any mm-hmm. story that you told over and over again 8 years ago,
right.
telling it again today, like that will make you sick. So anyway, that's what that was. It was a long journey. It toured all over the country. I went to schools where suicides had just happened. And it was a lot of pressure in ways I didn't realize, like to sort of be brought in as sort of response. And there would be times like a school shooting would happen. And my first instinct was not, oh, I have to bring the show and save them. But other folks would be like, you should go to Virginia Tech right now. And I'm like, I don't know that this is, you know, I'm not an ambulance yeah. chaser. I'm not like, I don't need to run after every like tragedy and be like, hey, you want to see some theater? Mm-hmm. But some of those schools actually have reached out to me and I've performed there. But it's also super intense because I remember being on one campus and I just started to cry because I could sense this absence in the room and I didn't, you know, I think I was also exhausted physically and just started to tear up and I had to, but I couldn't apologize for my tears because right. I think apologizing for our tears is creates this narrative for folks like, okay, you know, don't mourn, don't, everything has to be fine. So I had to just be there in front of this classroom going, I just want to acknowledge I'm crying right now because right. I feel his absence in the room and that's what this is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it was crazy because I think also in those years I was learning how to have relationships, like intimate relationships. It's very tricky to, I had a weird chip on my shoulder, like how do I date and then explain to people what I do for a living? Like I was so embarrassed that like the show is very funny, but I didn't want anyone I was dating to see the show. I also found myself becoming the character from the show in my real life. Like I was literally like trying to save everybody. I dated all these losers. I'll just put it out there. If you dated me during the run of Wong Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest,
you're a loser.
You are a loser. It was attracting all sorts of weird juju in my life to like to play that character all the time and not know how to turn it off. I'm playing a character named Christina Wong. Right, it's sort of true, sort of not.
Yeah.
Having to constantly talk about this subject 24 hours a day. Then I go maybe on an internet date and they go, what do you do for a living? I'm like, that's the last thing I want to do. I spend all day hawking my show. Like, I just want to have a private life, you know? And then I would just come across so like mean
right.
to these poor people. And like, I mean, it was rough. I worked so hard. I deserve everything I've received. I had to deal with a lot of bullshit that people say too, like, oh, of course you got grants. That was depression, suicide. That's a hot topic. Of course you got money for doing that. You know, like there's a lot of people doing the work on the same topic that we're not, nobody is handed anything, you know, right. I think, especially people of color. And I think I had internalized, I don't really deserve this. Like until I really like physically actually save people from dying and this came from other people of color. People just going, oh, do you get grants because you're a minority? Like just like these assumptions of how funding works. Right. And I'm like, what?
We've internalized that racism.
Yeah.
So deep.
That we've internalized that this is how we get ahead right. is that we're charity. We're right. you know,
because we're not actually good enough.
We just, and I think I internalized that a lot, and really almost was dismissive of my own work and allowed myself to get in relationships where either I had to feel like I had some agency because I could be in a financial position to save them or whatever. And I mean, it took a lot of it was hard. I couldn't see a therapist because I was always gone. So it was hard to, and there was no Obamacare then. So it was just like, how do I go about seeking help? It was disaster. I feel like I'm much healthier, and a lot of it is, I will say, for those who might be going in the same situation, is just challenging myself to have a completely new experience.
I'm curious because I also saw you speak at UCLA and your experience as an undergrad and whatnot. Like, before you made the show and when you got the idea to make the show, I'm hearing you say, like, You wanted to save everyone. You wanted to save everyone from this mental health issue that was really prominent in Asian American women. But how did you think about it for yourself? Did you see it as that?
So I had seen therapists in college. And I, you know, actually during the whole tour of Cuckoo's Nest, I would not say at the Q&A that I had seen a therapist. Mm. Like, I was so... the stigma was that deep. And I will say that up until recently, I had had no positive experiences talking to a therapist. The reason why is I didn't understand how that process worked. Where the stigma came from is, like, therapists were very much something that just white folks on television saw. Right. Growing Pains with Alan Thicke as a therapist, Frasier, like, and I remember saying to my mom, I want to see a therapist. And she said, it costs too much. And if anybody finds out you ever saw a therapist, you won't get a job when you're older. And that sent a very clear message that your joy is not as important as your money and employment and what people think of you. And that is very Chinese. And my mom's not an immigrant, right? Like, but that broke my heart. And she knows it broke my heart. I think to this day, she's like, why did I just take her to a therapist so she doesn't have to, didn't have to drag this out career. 8 years, 8 years on a stage. But, you know, I mean... we both learned, like, I think if she could take it back, maybe she would have done that. But I don't know that it would have helped. And because I think at that point there's I sensed a lot of cultural incompetency with therapists. They would immediately go, so your parents immigrants? And I felt very overcompensating that immediately these white therapists were like trying to project my experience onto some study they had read or some knowledge they had about. And I had to be like, no, my folks are not immigrants. However, like, you know, just don't pattern me up to every
so they have a really easy formula to figure out.
I didn't understand therapy. I didn't have a good thing with it. I did have a therapist at Kaiser when I was an adult, and she immediately made me take all these tests.
Yep. And same experience.
And I was like, oh, great. Like, this is official. But then did you take the MMPI?
I don't know
about that in my show. But it had so many cultural biases in it. Like when I watch television, I empathize with the people I see. And it's like,
they don't look like me.
Yeah, but some people. Irrelevant. Yeah, exactly. Some people don't look like me. What if I don't read the new actual paper? Right. Like, what if I get my media? Like, and it turns out that test is super old and has only been edited once in the 80s. And then she immediately was like, all right, you're going to go on these pills and that pill. Like my body was like a checking account, right? Like, this goes up, this will go down. And like, whoa. Because already I just was like, it's such a stigma about going there each week.
Yep.
Then now I'm so out of control. You got to like give me pills. It's like, I'm just trying to figure out how to have a conversation with my mom. Do I need to take all these drugs? And she's like, well, you can't, the therapy won't work until you're on drugs. And that's when I began to feel like, okay, now I'm crazy. And then of course I confided in my mom and she's like, well, see, you don't need that. Like, and it was just like, now I just feel like I'm out of control. This is making me emotional going back here. But anyway, I will say, I'm fine. Don't worry. I'm fine.
No, it's all good. I appreciate
it's important to have these, to jog through all this. And because I know I felt like I was like, all alone, and this is what I jog through Cuckoo's Nest is like, as Asian women, when I looked around, everyone was either super perfect and kept their shit to themselves super well, and then occasionally you'd hear about a woman who kills herself, an Asian woman, and you're just like, oh my god. And then and I'd hear stories about how those families would bury that they even existed, like hide their mail. And this happened on tour. I was like, I was at one school and a Chinese guy who became a therapist, Chinese American. He found out that he had an older brother and he had no idea because the older brother killed himself and the family had like hid all the photos, hid any record that this older brother exists because they were so ashamed that they had had a son that killed himself. And, you know, I hear stories like this enough that it's like, this is crazy. We have to figure out how to just like
take care of each other. Yeah, I resonate a lot with what you're talking about with therapy, because I feel like I've hit a lot of walls in therapy and I still like want to find a therapist, but I feel like what you were saying about your workshop and it getting over capacity and like that's a real need for women of color. Like we want to be seen, we want to be heard, and when another woman of color opens up that door, you like run to it, right?
Because
it's like, oh, I haven't received this before. And I think like
exactly
cultural competency for women of color is really important in therapy. I had the same experience at Kaiser. I went to a woman and she was like, so you don't want drugs? And I was like, what? Wait, hold on. That's like, what? I just wanted to like talk through some shit with you. Like, if I need drugs, maybe. But like, are you telling? Like, I'm so confused.
And I realized like how uneven and like, it's like how... It's sort of like if you do a PhD in English literature, some people specialize in British literature, some people specialize in American literature. Right. Psychology is the same thing. Like some people are more into drugs and tests and some people are more into just like talking it out. And I'm like, I didn't know how to ask for those things.
Right.
So, you know, when an authority person like a therapist tells you, okay, here's some drugs, it can be very scary.
Right.
And like, I don't want to fuck with those things sometimes. Now, thanks to Trump, I'm on Prozac, but which has been great. Uh-huh. It's gotten me through this 2017. But yeah, I really would like to function without having to fuck with the chemicals in my body, right, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, for sure. There's so much stigma already going there.
So some of the stuff I had read, you know, and I was just... There was such little information about mental health among people of color. Mm-hmm. I had a part-time job that I had quit right before I started working on Wong for the Cuckoo's Nest. And in the recycling bin at my job, I found mental health statistics about people of color. It was like this booklet. Mm-hmm. I still have it upstairs. It was the most useful thing I found in a recycling bin. And it was just, I think it was just stuff, stats just from LA. But the things that stood out to me is that people of color express their symptoms somatically. So rather than like, you know, white people have like a whole bunch of vocabulary to describe, I feel depressed with little notes notes of
like fine wine,
notes of sort of morose longing. But like, I think like people of color might just have a stomach ache or I need to lie down, you know,
right,
like
that. I'm tired.
Yeah, I'm tired. So it takes that much. So talk therapy becomes that much more of a what? Right. I wrote an essay for XO Jane that was called, I thought miserable was just being part of Chinese American, because so much of, I just felt like, you know, like hard work is miserable. My grandparents kind of like really worked really hard. And so I'm not sure what this therapist idea of joy, like, I don't know that I'm supposed to have access to that.
Mm.
Like, that seems to be something that just exists for this elite white television people imaginary thing. Like,
lives.
Yeah, that guilt is currency in a lot of people of color cultures, right? That you don't send your grandparents to nursing home.
Right.
If it breaks your mom's heart, you don't do it. You don't get that tattoo. You don't you don't make decisions because it makes you happy.
Right.
You do it for the honor of your entire family.
Yeah.
So that's where a lot of you know, stuff about therapy I didn't trust. Other things I had read is, I know it was a lot harder to collect data on refugee communities, which I think we get, right? If we have grandmas or abuelas, we know they're not going to walk into a study they think that if, in the case of my grandparents, if they have run from communism, they're not about to let any of their private information get recorded.
Right.
So
there's already so much mistrust with the government and like,
yeah. So my feeling is mental health is like measured in different ways, because culturally it's like, I don't know that this is, I think what's considered really depressing for white people is just going to like normal day to day for like Asian people or just working super hard.
Yeah.
You know?
No, for sure.
I just think it's like, it all ties back. Like even now, I have a very active presence on Twitter, or at least had before I got blocked by Trump, his three kids by the first wife.
Oh my God, they blocked
they blocked me.
Are you serious?
And oh my God.
He's supposed to be running a country, yo. Like, the fuck?
He's blocked to quite a few people. But like, I find that a lot of the trolls who troll me back, they have a huge issue with an Asian woman who speaks up. You know, and it all gets back to it comes. It's usually a race thing right away that they'll say, like, go eat some dog or, you know, you're Wong. And it's like it bothers people when an Asian woman speaks up. It bothers people that they can't. Why can't you just move ahead without getting in my face, you know, about the power I have, essentially. Right. So that's what all this is really about. And I'm seeing it more that I think I'm understanding and appreciating what the work I did stepping out of it. It's been like 3 or 4 years since I've toured the show, and I'll still talk about the issues. And I was really happy to do that thing at UCLA because it was the first time I was actually so clear about what my actual experience, I really dance around it and Wong Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, that what might've happened in my life. But like at UCLA, I was just super clear about like, I mean, that was amazing. That you want to talk about those like redeeming, validating moments. I'm in front of 8,000 incoming students telling them, here's my biggest, deepest, darkest secret. I saw a therapist.
Right.
And to have the whole stadium like explode in applause was kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. And to tell them, and you know what? It didn't work. It was like, because I wish I could have this happy story that's like, yeah, you just see a therapist and it gets fixed. And it's sometimes it's not. I'm not advocating against it. I think during the tour of Cuckoo's Nest, I was more anti-therapy. But I think it's one mode. And I think we have to think about other, like, I'm very fortunate that I have this outlet as an artist. But I don't think it's a coincidence that when I taught a women of color performance workshop 10 years ago, that it overfilled to capacity within a week, that there were women going through divorces, big moves, coming out of very traumatic situations who were signed up for my workshop. Because that is more therapeutic in ways than just talking and talking and talking and talking to someone who's listening to you, right? Like, just like make it something pretty and put it on a shelf,
right?
Or just transform it into something and be in community with other people. So much more healing, I find. You know, I think this work has saved my life, getting to call the shots. You know, it's also giving me fucking headache every day. Every day when I'm like, okay, I'm gonna make money this year, here we go, you know. But I'm very fortunate that I found this, and I can see absolutely why it can't just be just figuring it out on your own, but just surrounding yourself in a culture that really supports you. And I find that the culture of arts versus comedy, which is more male and more judgmental and more commercially driven, is more supportive, especially community-based arts.
You shared a lot of like the struggles within making the show. Like, now looking back, when you were in like the rut of it, like, what would you say to that, to Christina?
I would have said, all right, you should probably find a therapist and just be seeing somebody in this time. Watch that you don't become the character from the show. Don't date any of these losers. Don't listen to people who tell you that you're only getting money because you're Asian. I would just also tell her to like stop complaining so much too. I was having a really hard time and was really bitter because I was both working through personal shit and trying to make a show about it. It was hard to not get constantly triggered and upset. And I don't know. I definitely won't touch that topic again for a long time. Like, it's been referenced in a bunch of my other shows, but yeah, I'm not about to embark on another suicide show for sure.
That's a lot to hold. Sounds like it was a lot to hold for you.
Yeah.
Because you were also holding your own mental health at the time.
It was a mess. Yeah. I think I got triggered now. Look, I'm crying. The worst thing you can ever have happen is someone cry.
No.
Tears are the worst.
No.
I'm joking. That's my sarcastic voice.
No, you said something really beautiful that I want to like hashtag. It's like, tears are
normal. I don't know. Oh well, there it went.
Tears are normal. Well, yeah, there's something as you were like saying it, I'm like, we're gonna make a meme about this. I know you're not a therapist, but like, in your own
experience, who wants tips from a non-therapist who's crying on a podcast? Anybody? Would anyone like my tips?
I mean, yeah.
Would anyone like
Stephanie wants your tips.
Hey, you see all this clutter in my house? What, like, my tips on mental health? What has been, I think exercising every day, which I know is a very hard habit to get into. Yeah. I think that actually had helped me a ton. And I think just like saying, what's something crazy I could do this year? Like a marathon or like you don't have to go to Uganda by yourself and then wander into a room with a bunch of guys and then be very lucky that you end up recording a hit rap album as I did. But like take a class and something new, like really try just something that's just crazy. You know, you find these smaller commitment type things. And it was hard for me because I kept leaving town because I was like, I want to volunteer or do something. But then, okay, I got to go leave again. It was very hard. Mm-hmm. For me, I started taking improv classes because I was like, I just need to have therapy in the form of people. Because just making stuff by myself all day long was really like,
yeah,
it was rough. And but it was hard to find like a set amount of time that I was home long enough to commit to a class.
Right.
So that kind of stuff. I love community art spaces and hopefully we'll still have funding. Yeah. But I think it's really about seeking stuff out. And if not, figuring out how to build that community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear you on the building community. I've learned that this year myself. I'm like, oh, I'm so much more efficient and better in community.
Yeah.
Like I need my peoples.
Yeah.
Or else.
I think getting massage too. I've been lucky in LA.
Massages.
We have
forever.
Korean spas.
Yes.
And that's what got me through last year. Last year, 2017 was like, I look at pictures of myself in 2017 versus every other year. I got aged. That man has aged me in this office. Like, oh, like every push notification, I just felt like hair is going gray on my head. And I would just go to the Korean spa after a long day of tweeting at the administration. He's been blocking, you know, people who...
Who say anything negative to him.
Yeah. Right. So that sort of slowed down that, which has actually been better for my health a little to not be constantly like on his, because I was literally on his biorhythms. I'd wake up at 6 a.m. to get the first tweets. It was just insane. But it was like the only way I felt like I could be doing something about what was happening. Well, and I will say of this new regime, it makes me realize how important my work is as an artist.
Yep.
And I really took it for granted for so many years that I could work with different communities. But now this is not just cute stuff in a theater. This is like life or death. So I have like a project that I'm proposing and hopefully I'll hear back soon to work with undocumented folks through the Dream Resource Center to do a theater project with them. Like to me, like that is why I'm on this planet.
Right.
Like to do that kind of work and just like I really now think about when I think about community, it has so much more of an importance we cannot take for granted. Nope. Like I really was convinced by the end of last year I'd be on the 405 with a pipe, like fighting people, like pushing a shopping cart with like tuna cans, like away from a city on fire,
right,
you know?
Right.
And when the election happened, like I just cried on the couch, that couch for like weeks. And then I went to church. I went to Agape, which is more spiritual center than a church. And it was helpful. I was sobbing, but I was like, well, if they're going to come for us, they got to get through this community. It made me so excited that there was not excited, but like it made me so happy that there was infrastructure.
Right.
That there were nonprofits, as dysfunctional as nonprofits are, that, you know, they have to get through all of us, all these things that we've built before they can really come get us.
Yeah.
You'd hope. Right. So that's something I'm thinking about a lot.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yay. So how can folks find you, Christina?
My website that's not very updated is my name, ChristinaWong.com. You can find me on Twitter, MS Christina Wong, and Instagram, MS Christina Wong. And then I love Christina Wong on Facebook.
Christina is so dope. Y'all, you actually are very lucky. You can actually go see Christina this weekend, Friday and Saturday at Grand Performances. She is going to be premiering a new work of art called Christina Wong for Public Office Campaign Premiere. That's right. Christina is not only a comedian, performance artist, and rapper, she is now turned politician. What? No, but for real, she's dope and her performances are amazing. You'll probably catch me there on one of those nights. And guess what? It's free. So go support Christina. Tell her you heard her on the podcast. Tell her how wonderful she is. So reflecting back on this episode, I really loved the way Christina kind of shared her experience as a woman of color, kind of trying to hold face and pretend that everything is okay, and that also cultural stigmas were present and there was a lot of shame around seeking support for your mental health. And it made me really start to think about all the things that we as women of color or folks of color have to navigate in our health and our healthcare system. And it really made me want to be stronger in advocating for my own health, right? Whether it's going to the doctor's office and having symptoms dismissed and really like naming what we need from the doctor and being persistent about what we need, or whether it's just like undoing these like cultural barriers and stigmas for the next generations and normalizing things like therapy and tears for all genders, right? Hashtag tears are normal. I love that. Thank you, Christina. And tears aren't a sign of weakness. They're a sign of strength and beauty and the depth of one's emotions. So I love that so much. She also talked about finding your community, right? Which I spoke on a little bit about really finding the folks that are going to support you to grow, whether that's in your career, in your relationships, in your job, like finding those folks that are down for you. And taking risks. Taking risks, do something new and different, whether it's taking a new class, like she said, taking a different, you know, trip or whatever is in your accessibility. Maybe it's just creating some art, right? We all got to create a little bit more art. I am all about art making, whether it's creating a quick poem in the morning, you know, singing a song, doing a little dance, you know, writing something out, create art, take risks, do what you got to do. I really enjoyed Christina and all her reflections and vulnerability. So thank you so much, Christina. I will catch you this weekend. I hope to see the rest of y'all there. Have a great week.
Sabor y Salud Podcast is a labor of love. Brought to you by me, your host, Belin Mojarro, and my talented homegirl, nature traveler, and co-producer extraordinaire, Stephanie Aguilar. Information shared on Sabor y Salud podcast is not intended to replace medical or professional advice or treatment. Please consult your personal healer, doctor, physician, or curandera before trying new health practices.